I've struggled to write about the subject that we're going to talk about this morning for years. I'd started to write about it as early as November in 2007 and couldn't find sufficient insight. Through recent events in the last few years of my life, the subject, or marked lack thereof, has returned as a reminder of my old intention. With my truest inspiration for being able to write at this time, coming from observations of someone near and dear to me. In observing this person on a regular basis, I've realized that they are one of the closest embodiments of my subject that I have ever had the fortune to call friend. I wish to preface my talk with the observation that what I share is very much my own opinion and interpretation of this concept, meaning, and my understanding of its effect on my life. I also recognize that I am not that well endowed in the bearing of this concept as I'd like to be, which is likely why I have had such a hard time writing about it until now. As I offer my feelings and understanding of this precept, I honor and recognize that it is such a vast subject that likely each and every person here could nobly add and or modify my offering to its betterment. But since I'm here, I'll go ahead and talk about it. Today, I'd like to talk about grace. The hymn we just heard or sang, Amazing Grace, was first published in 1779 as a spiritual autobiography of John Newton's life. It is a beautiful representation of how vast and powerful a concept or precept grace can be. You see, Newton was raised with no particular religious affiliation. He was pressed into service of the Royal British Navy and subsequently involved in the Atlantic slave trade after his discharge. In 1748, a storm battered his vessel so severely that he prayed to God for mercy. It is said that he, in that moment, converted to a religious man. Though he continued in the slave trade for some time after this event, in about 1755, he left and began his studies of Christian theology. He was ordained in the Christian Church of England in 1764 and became a curate of Alney, Buckinghamshire, where he, with poet William Cowper, wrote Amazing Grace. So in this aspect of grace, we see the growth of an individual through the catalyst of a near-death experience, through which the lens of prayer, he observed the wretchedness of his state of life, and it appears, sees his true state, and determines to transform his being. Carefully listen to Newton's meaning and perceptions of grace in this original poem, in which the anonymous replacement of the sixth stanza is returned to its original state. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound. It saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now am found. Was blind, but now I see. 'Twas grace that taught my heart to fear, and grace my fears relieved. How precious did that grace appear, the hour I first believed. Through many dangers, toils, and snares, I have already come. 'Tis grace that brought me safe thus far, and grace will lead me home. The Lord has promised good to me. His word my hope secures. He will my shield and portion be, as long as life endures. Yea, when this flesh and heart shall fail, and mortal life shall cease, I shall possess within the veil a life of joy and peace. As a side note, Newton's poem's original last stanza also reveals his understanding of the continuity of life, in which, shedding the physical body, he foresees life, joy, and peace within the veil. So this seems to talk to grace as an entity of change unto itself, which is acting upon Newton. But the truer meaning is that grace was the resultant state into which Newton found himself transformed. And within this state, he thus is in a perspective of greater self and world understanding. He has found a great spiritual epiphany. And in the epiphany, his path forward in life is laid out before him. He need look no further than his inner compass, his spiritual self-guidance, to know what to do. It is this grace and its byproducts that I'm speaking of today. So grace, as a personal perspective, can be a place of profound stillness in which we observe and formulate responses to the outer and inner world in a spiritual, receptive, and near-judgmentless state. I think in order to achieve this state, we must surely have found self-forgiveness, just as Newton would have needed to forgive himself for his actions as a slaver. I also think we need to be courageous and essentially fearless. For how else can we become open to face our own wrongness and illness? How else can we slay our inner demons? We, each of us, must for ourselves bring our inner wrongness to the light and determine the fate of these things, which are us. To keep and grow them, or to release and separate from them. Before we're able to see our inner and outer world in a non-judgmental way, we need to purge ourselves of guilt and fear, the source of most of our self-misunderstanding and the greatest obstruction to our clear understanding of others. If we're free of fear and without guilt, then we will not color the world with their stigma. Fearless and guiltless, we more clearly perceive our inner and outer worlds for what they are, rather than what we would make them out to be. Grace's byproducts are the other things which flow from persons of grace. These include observations of those who possess grace, appearing to know what to say and do in a near perfect manner in each situation in which they're confronted. We may see this type of grace in the movements of an Olympic skater, where they have achieved a level of perfection and fluidity from practice combined physical and mental oneness with each action. Their performance demonstrates specific grace. Grace, according to Google, in Christian theology, is a state of sanctification by God, the state of one who, under such divine influence, the conception of grace developed. Grace is further defined as elegance and beauty of movement or expression, a sense of purity, and consideration for others. a disposition to kindness and compassion. In Greek mythology, it is defined as one of three sisters who were the givers of beauty and charm. These, I think, fit the definition of grace that we focus on today. Both the internal transformation, of magnanimous personification and outward appearance. There are other definitions, but these are very secondary to our discussion, so unimportant. I would say the Christians essentially see grace, as do I. If everything is of infinite intelligence, then it matters not what event or thing of this universe is the inspiration or catalyst for the development of greater consciousness in a being. It can be said in any situation of growth in grace that sanctification of one under divine influence has occurred. Further, it can be said that to live in a state of grace is to live as a being of greater consciousness and thoughtfulness. Being or loving, caring, kind, and compassionate. We may see grace in a more general way in those elevated persons who we know or meet, who somehow know exactly what to say or do, just at the right time when we need it. They provide comfort, assurance, or guidance for us on our path, sometimes without us even knowing that we needed that little bit of help. They know and they give. Oh, that each of us could be that being, that knowing and loving person. And the truest of these, deeply endowed with grace, call no attention to their state. They look for no recognition. They just are. And in a most ironic beauty, many have no recognition of their own beautifully endowed self. Again, they just are. If you think of yourself as a seeker after truth and growth, it would behoove you to contemplate grace in its many meanings. Give this thought. It has helped me to better understand that which attracts and repels me in others. For me, a distinct lack of grace can be a great distraction in a personality. Those who are utterly graceless appear crude, rude, and self-serving. They're often oblivious to the feelings and the plights of others. Who would you rather be spending time with? Who would you rather be? So what are some of the other aspects of grace which play into the overall being or not of being graceful? What it is not. Greedy, selfish, pompous, arrogant, malignant. It is not judgmental or hateful, nor self-indulgent. It is not perfect either, for it is a place of never-ending growth. It is pious, thoughtful, caring, loving, supportive, generous, patient, understanding, gentle, and strong. Grace is self-sustaining and self-nurturing as it feeds off of each kindness given or received, off of each lesson understood and accepted. And grace sometimes means allowing others to fail or hurt or flounder, that they might find their own way to growth and fulfillment. Grace finds its way in doing unto others as you would have others do unto you. If you've never thought about grace, the concept and the meaning likely has offered little in your day and life. If you're a seeker and you continue to desire self-growth, and the ability to help others. Contemplate this principle as a teaching and a practice, and as revelations as a mantra, and grow in richness of being. It will open you up to healing, love, peace, understanding, and with new perspectives in which to help others and yourself. When you've been there 10,000 years, bright shining as the sun, with no less days to sing God's praise than when you first begun, remember that one once said to thee, with grace to be as one. Thank you.